Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 62. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, good to talk to you again. My name is The Brant. I am your host, Solo, for this episode, which I have entitled, Looking, Found Someone You Have, I would say. And that is the name of the episode because, whoo, have we been busy and out of it and whatnot. So good to be back talking to everybody. Howdy out there. Before we begin, I just want to say Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And also, it is a podcast brought to you by a store, a friendly local gaming store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. If you are in that area, in the Boston, New York area, please stop by. Check us out. If you are a regular, thanks for coming. Thanks for your business, as always. I keep spreading the word and telling people about the great things that are happening at the Portal and just board gaming and gaming in general and whatnot, because it's a great hobby for that. A couple quick things. www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out. Facebook, The Portal, and at Portal Gaming 60 on Twitter. Those are all the places to find us. So yeah, first off, I want to say thank you to Larry and Gary, who did the last episode post-Gen Con. They did their Gen Con recap. A nice two-hour episode for you as they were driving home. Definitely, if you didn't get a chance, and I should have put a link in the notes and I forgot, check it out. You can watch the video of them, which is kind of humorous to see all the stuff piled up in the car, on Gary's channel, which is a YouTube channel, Late to the Table. So you can watch that there if you already listened to the episode, whatnot. But yeah, special thanks to them for doing that. That's the first episode that I have not been on thus far, which I knew it wasn't going to be on the episode because I wasn't able to go to Gen Con. I really wanted them to do that recap. That's kind of our annual thing, that driving home from Gen Con. We talk about everything because I feel like the quicker we could get it out to you, the better, more than, you know, really collecting our thoughts. I think it's kind of fun every so often to just have an episode where it's just like, boom, here's what we're thinking initial and whatnot. And just kind of fun to do that as long as the audio quality holds up, which the first one time we did it, it wasn't so good. But since then, I think it's been pretty good. So that was nice. So thanks to both of them for doing that. Where have we been? Well, I think I did a solo episode a while back. Had one with my wife. Brian has not been on an episode in forever, so he went away on vacation. Then he was supposed to go to Gen Con. The poor guy, he got sick. He could not go to Gen Con, so he missed out on Gen Con. And then it's just been craziness since then. So we were supposed to try to do an episode. I got hired finally. I teach, and I didn't have a job. I got hired on Tuesday afternoon. Started Wednesday morning last week, woo, and just hit the ground running, and all the fall events picked up with my after-school teaching things and events and being at the store, and I got friends' weddings and all sorts of chaos that are going on, so it has just been crazy, and now Brian's away on a little getaway with his wife and son, and I said, you know what, I better just knock out another episode, even though we don't have him, so he misses everybody. He wants to talk to you. He's got a lot to say. We've played a ton of games, actually. So ironically, usually I almost podcast more with Brian than I get to play games with him. But lately, in these interims, we've had a lot of times to play games together. So that's been good. So I'm sure he's got a lot to tell everybody about. There's a lot going on at the store. Lots of things are happening. Events coming up. Definitely check out events pages. I know there is a... Harrison, help me. There's an upcoming Extra Life event at the store, really an Extra Life awareness. It's not so much of a, hey, donate right now, but it's a, hey, know this is a thing and have a good time. And that's coming up. I want to say it's September 24th. Apologies if I have the wrong date. You can double check that. But that should be a good time. And as well as all the other things that are going on at the store. It seemed like the summer got just like dull for a week or two. And then pick back up at the store, and there's been a lot of people around, and I'm not sure, but even last week, Thursday night, school had started, and there was a lot of people there, and even didn't seem like a college crew left and whatnot, so That's been really happening. I've been to a Sunday recently. That was jumping. So, I mean, board games are just exciting right now. Miniatures games with new 40K coming out and exciting announcements like Legion and all sorts of things are happening. So, you know, get on out to the store. Get your family out there. Get your kids, your friends, your cousins, your relatives, your uncles. Whatever you got, bring them out to the store. And let's just have a good time and hang out. Hey, while you're there, if you think about it next time, pick something up off the shelf, purchase it. Yeah, you know, I guess I work for the store. I'm there long enough, but it's my FLGS too. And I would just throw it out there that, you know, it really helps when you support the store, word of mouth, buy something while you're there, and whatnot. I'm not asking anybody to break their budget. That would be crazy. Maybe you don't take it from me. Maybe you take this as a just a plug, self-promotion, since I have been and worked with the store and whatnot for a while. But I think it's worth mentioning and just realizing that if you have an opportunity to purchase something there, that really makes the big difference and whatnot. And with upcoming events and birthday parties and Christmases and whatnot, you know, think of that as a great shopping place. They really go above and beyond to help community and be part of community. And I think it's important to keep them going and keep that store thriving and whatnot. So, and I think there's a lot of good that's going to happen in the future related to all that. So that should be exciting. Awesome. Yeah, so I titled that episode, that Yoda quote, looking, found someone you have, I would say, because you just have not seen us in a while. So, or seen us, you haven't seen us at all. But have not talked to you in a while. So I thought that was a good fitting thing. Quick plug for the Silk City Board Game Group. That is September 30th, the last day of the month. Saturday, 12 to 4:30 p.m. They're going to be pulling out a whole bunch of Gen Con games. Props to Jen, especially. She spoke at Gen Con, did a whole thing on board games in the library. Sounded like it went really well. Matt, her husband, was there helping out, and I think they pulled home a good haul of games that they're going to have for that event. So that should be really exciting. Many of us obviously didn't get to go to Gen Con, myself included, and we get to see those games and whatnot now. I'm excited because my review copy of Whistle Stop is sitting at the store as we speak, so I'm going to pick that up and get that running. That was an exciting one. I got to play at Dice Tower Con, and I'm really excited to get that in people's hands and eyeballs and joy and whatnot. So that one was exciting. Got my copy of Viral, played that. I'll talk about that. So it's really been exciting. And thanks again to Larry, who went on our behalf, handed out cards, and was able to pick up demos and review copies for us at Gen Con. So that's exciting. Thank you for listening, letting this podcast happen. I never really thank you. And a lot of podcasts do that. And I don't do that as much. We don't have a Patreon or anything like that. I'm just as happy if you support the store and whatnot. But you know, it helps, and all that support for them helps, to do that. And you listening helps to support, ways that we can get review copies and demos and things like that, which are not a must in my mind. If I have to talk about games that, you know, I've purchased that we have otherwise that are a month old, so be it. I think gaming is gaming and that's fine, but we can get those early copies too. I feel like it just builds a little more excitement. So I like to try to get something, you know, a month or two before it comes out and then say, hey, this is coming out, and kind of build up that excitement and give people a chance to play it and whatnot. So any of that support you give us is much appreciated. Hey, if you don't live in the Connecticut area and you listen to the podcast, thank you. Thank you so much for supporting us, listening to us. I don't know. It's a crazy little concept we have here. You know, the idea of like, here's a podcast about a store. And, you know, we mostly talk about board games. That's what we're passionate about. But I think it's cool if people listen. A lot of people, when I tell them it's about a store, they figure I'm talking about like, and then we stacked seven boxes on top of these three boxes. And then I shelved this and I scanned all the SKU codes into the computer, followed by, and that just sounds boring to me. So, I mean, if you want to know those details, try to do some of that. I have talked about doing more store things, but, yeah, not so far. So let's talk about some games. So I have to take a drink every so often. So you're just going to have to wait. Rotto style. Everybody laughs when it's solo me because all these things that I do when Brian's talking. I just take the pause. I'm going to go back. Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, it's September 5th when I'm recording this, and I'm going back to August 4th to tell you about plays. So I guess it's been a while. Hopefully I'm not repeating these. Here we go. Vinos Deluxe Edition. So I got to play this with my wife. This is the Ian O'Toole R. Eagle Griffin's great game of Vinos. We had played the 2016 edition. Now we played the 2010 more complex version. Basically, it's a heavy Euro where you have to control your money and your funds and finances, and you have to create wine and bring it to the wine fair and show it off. That's kind of the short of it. There's a bunch of little mechanisms that run around that. So what happens specifically in the 2010 edition is you don't get any little bonus tiles. If you do things, you have to kind of earn bonus abilities and then spend wine to be able to move those around. So that's a little bit more complex in terms of getting special abilities to trigger, as well as your money isn't necessarily liquid, or I guess in some way it is, but it's in the bank, and you have to actually spend an action to withdraw money from the bank. But you can also increase your interest, so you're gaining money if you don't spend it from round to round, and that money track gives you bonus points at the end of the game. So if you can have money in the bank, you can get bonus points. So you're trying to play with the money you have on hand and not spend actions and not spend money. That's kind of what makes that version more complex. The game is beautiful. I don't know why, but the first time we played, I didn't use all the little extra accessories, little wine rack with little wine bottles for all the different qualities of the wine. The artwork is just amazing. This Ian O'Toole guy is just knocking out of the park with Nemo's War, Gallerist, Vinos, Lisboa. Now he's got these prints up on BGG if you haven't seen him. I mean, this guy is, he's the real deal. There is an interview with him from Heavy Cardboard that you should go listen to on their channel, podcast, or otherwise, or YouTube. That's really good talking to him, and that's kind of interesting. So, anyway, Vinos. So, we weren't huge fans of the 2016. It felt like a worker placement game, and there was just not, there was a lot there, but just not a ton going on, and I felt like I'd be happy to play Viticulture and kind of have all these differences. So we tried the 2010. It was a lot better, but our issue, it felt like two players. So I just decided, you know what, I'm going to do all these other aside things to score points and let my wife get the fair points. And there's just such a big divide on the points you get in the fair. It's like in the first round, first place gets 9 and second place gets 3. And then the second round's like 15 and 4. And then it's like 20 and 5. Which is my own fault for not trying to win the fair, and so that made a big differential. But I felt like, oh, should I be able to do these other things? So it really felt like the fair was important. But with two people, it was hard to really give a challenge to somebody because you kind of retained your score. So if she had 7 fair points and I had 2, she goes into the second fair that way. So it's really on me to try to catch up. And that seemed tough to do with two people. So it didn't really, like, hook us on any specific ability. Again, it's beautiful. It's a great theme. There's cool mechanisms, but there was nothing that was like, this is the thing that's drawing us in. So I know a lot of people really like Vinos, so I want to try it with 3 and 4 players. I know it could even go back to the What's Your Game version, which is supposedly a little bit even more complex. We could try that, but that's kind of where that left us. So I would definitely play it with 3 and 4, but I don't think I want to play it with 2 again. Caverna, Cave versus Cave. So this is Mayfair Games, and this is like two-player Caverna. And so what happens in this game is you've got little action tiles, and you draw the action tile, you draft the action tiles. When you draft an action, you get to gain resources, or each player, it's a two-player only game, has a cave in front of them, and you can kind of like excavate your cave or build a new room in your cave. And what's neat is when you excavate a room, it's kind of got like a stone tile, and you flip it over and put it in the center, and that's now a room that people can buy. So there's pretty good variability in those rooms and those action tiles that come out and whatnot. So that's how that game works, Cave or Cave. And then each round, you're adding more of those they're really worker placement spaces, but you draft them instead of put workers there to save. You got a bunch of different resources. Again, I'm going to talk about a bunch of games, so I'm not going to go into high level of detail. But if you want to know more, I gladly would tell you more about the game. Just let me know. You could tweet at me at PortalGaming60, or you can send an email, PortalGamingPodcast@gmail.com, and check all that out. So, yeah, there's that. So I played it a couple times, And it's good, it's solid, it's fine, but it just doesn't wow me like the other ones. The All Creatures Great and Small just flows really well. The Le Havre one, Inland Port, is just really clever in how you control all of your resources. And to me, Patchwork is just hands down. It's not, Patchwork isn't really any of the other games. Some people say it's Feast for Odin. I don't know. To me, it's just Patchwork. But I played Patchwork again recently. I think it's amazing. So if I'm going to pull out a two-player game of these Uwes, I'm just playing Patchwork every time. The people who, you know, kind of poo-poo that, I don't get it. Because, whew, that game is amazing. So there's that. All right, other recent plays. Got to play Century Spice Road a couple times now. So Century Spice Road is a very light gateway-esque game. There is a row of cards. The theme is you're trading spices, literally. And there's a row of like purchase cards. If you can collect the right colored spices, you can trade them in and get points for these cards. And so you're trying to collect the right spices so you can trade them in on your turn. And the line kind of slides down, a la Through the Ages. And the end of the line is worth more, assuming people don't take it. And then there's a line of like action cards, and the action cards allow you to gain new spices, trade up for spices. There's like a hierarchy of spices by color, and you can trade those. So your turn's really simple. You play a card and gain the resources and or trade, or you can take a card from the center, whether you take the one, take an action card, which those you kind of draft small world style, so you have to put spices on if you want to grab like the third one. You have to put them on the first two, or you just take that front one, and or you can buy one of those cards. And the last action is you can pick up all your cards from the table. So as you play them, you lay them on the table, your hand empties, you pick them back up, and you're going for that kind of mini efficiency engine there. So really fun game. Couple of strange faults to me was like once somebody has a recipe, it doesn't really like behoove them to cash that in. You kind of just sit there waiting for a challenger and then cash it in. And that was a little strange. And the sliding market to me felt a little unnecessary. Like, okay, these ones, people are going to predict these are coming and then they're going to grab those. So they're just going to get the bonus coin. It was never like, ooh, grab that quickly. That didn't seem to be a thing in the game on my first play. But my second play was like 25, 30 minutes, super smooth. And those issues went away in a much faster game. I won't tell you how long my first game was. It'll scare some people off. not me. But yeah, Century Spice Road is a great game. And is it an essential? Probably. Is it a Splendor killer? I don't know. There's not a lot of engine building. And I've been playing Splendor lately with my daughter. And there's something to that engine build in Splendor. Splendor I can kind of like see. I can see the path. In Century Spice Road, I just kind of play, and those cards get flipped over. So it's kind of Dominion versus Ascension. Maybe not that gap. For most people, Dominion's a lot better. Maybe not quite that gap. They kind of stand side by side separate. But it's a great game. I would play it again. They got a Golem edition, so I guess I got to try that, because, hey, Golems are cooler than spices. So that sounds good. Played some more Nemo's War. I think I already talked about that solo game. You know, tool artwork. It's really good. It's really fun. You roll dice like crazy, but that's fun. It's really fun. I don't know what else to say. Typically, when you lose a die roll, you're like, eh, okay, so I got to spend another action to take another one. So that's a cool solo game. Haven't tried it with more people. Don't expect to. I don't know if I talked about these games already. Oh, well, whatever. Here we go. All right. Yeah, Kathy and I talked about Heart of Crown. That's a great deck builder. Got the expansion for Heart of Crown. So that adds another princess that you can put out there. So Heart of Crown, in case you don't remember, is basically Dominion, but with a theme. You're trying to back a princess and then get her to be a coronated queen. So that's the idea. But it's kind of got two phases. It has the Dominion, just like get the cards phase. And then once you back a queen, now you have like extra actions you can do and an asymmetric power. Love asymmetric powers. Expansion's got more and it's got some cards. So here's my one negative I would say with this game is there are some very text heavy cards. Nothing is that complicated. I haven't come across anything that I'm like, what is that telling me to do? Typically it's like branching paths. It's like you could choose to do this or this. If you choose this, then blah, 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 blah. If you choose this, then blah, 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 blah. or it's just very highly detailed, and I'm not sure that it needs to be. Take a card, reveal it, flip it over, have everybody around the table do the same thing, then one at a time. It's like, it's almost, it's not written like a technical manual, it's written even more than that. So that would be my one negative, is you get this tiny text and a whole bunch on a card that I think could overwhelm people. But I really like the game a lot. It's super fun. Been playing it a ton. Everybody I've introduced it to has loved it. So, Heart of Crown. Japanime games. Tramways. Got to play Tramways. I've played solo and I've played with my wife. So Tramways is an Alpen Viard game. Ooh, is it Ludi Creations? I don't remember. I'm sorry. Maybe it'll say here for me. Oh, it doesn't tell me the publisher. All right. Sorry, I'm just trying to see here. Nope. So this is an interesting game. It really reminds me of Age of Steam. And so you are trying to get people from locations to other locations by building tramways or railways or whatever they are. And it's got hand management slash deck building in it. The cards are very, like, abstracted. It's like, this could give you money, or this could give you an action, or you could use this to move somebody to a residential zone. So you've got, like, residential, commercial, industrial, and luxury. So it kind of feels like SimCity in that sense. And you're playing certain sets of cards to do certain things. You're scoring happiness points, and you're getting money. And essentially, money is all to be built up so that when you bring people to luxury, you can spend money. So one is a point. 3 is 2 points, 6 is 3 points, 10 is 4 points, etc. And you want to kind of balance getting there to turn in the money for the points, but, you know, not spending too many actions because your costs will be cheaper, but spend enough actions and yada, yada, yada. So I played solo. It's a pretty interesting puzzle. There's some changes. Played 2-player. It didn't draw us in a lot. I really just felt like I'd like to be playing Age of Steam. Now, there isn't really a 2-player Age of Steam. I thought the deck building would be really interesting, but often since the cards have multiple symbols on them, it felt like I can really always do what I want. Maybe I have to do something a little less optimal than I want to. Ooh, I really didn't want to use this card because this would give me 2 money at the end of the round if I don't spend it. Oh, well, I'll use it and not have the 2 money. That was really the only decision that I had to make. I think it just needs more people. The solo's interesting. I felt like the solo was better to learn the game. And the auction is very awkward. It was neat that he tried to create a unique auction, but it just felt awkward. And in 2-player, it felt super awkward. It's this weird, like, one person bids, and then the other person bids, but they don't have to bid higher. And so then the person who bid the highest can rebid, and they can bid any value except what they bid, and then people after them can't bid what they bid, but they have to bid somewhere. So you keep paying to stay in every round. I guess kind of that's what you do in auctions and bidding, but it just felt awkward, and it was like one of us would just be like, I'll bid $1. I'm out. Or I'll bid 2, and then the next round, I'm out, and the other person's in for 2. Like, it didn't stay super interesting in terms of that, but I would play it again if other people would want to play it, and I would definitely play it on a higher player count. I'd love to try 3, 4, or 5. I think that might be where this game is at. But again, when I get to that player count, might I want to be playing Age of Steam? This is shorter, I'm pretty sure, than Age of Steam. But anyway, it was neat, but it just didn't shock me or whatever. I played Splendor. Splendor was super fun. Played Near and Far. All right. So Near and Far is a game by Ryan Lockett, Red Raven Games. This is like an adventure Euro. So played Above and Below once. You read little stories. They're exciting. But all I wanted to do was just keep reading stories. And I won the game by reading a bunch of stories and rolling dice successfully and gathering whatever it was I was supposed to gather. But Near and Far adds a lot of different elements on top of that. So it's got a town you can go to with a bunch of worker placement action spaces. It's got a game map atlas, I think it's called, and you fold it out and you've got your game board and you have multiple game boards. Reminds me of some of these like all-inclusive, all-in-one board game magazines you'd get as a kid or whatever. And that was a really cool aspect. And then it has like story arcs for each character in the game. And that's what we ended up playing. That was really interesting. And so on your turn, you can either work or place, or you can adventure on this map. And so on the map, it's all about courage. So you acquire travelers to go along with you, journey people, I can't remember what they're called. And you can have like a little party, and they have hearts, which are courage on them. The more hearts you have, kind of the further you can travel. And then you spend 3 hearts to put a camp tile down on the board, or a camp piece on the board. And when one player runs out of those camp pieces, that's the end of the game right there. And you can put those in other places, and they, when you remove them, you get little rewards, and the spaces you put them on give you rewards, whether it be points for end game or resources you can collect, because then you can trade in resources. Oh, other key piece, hand management. You've got a hand of cards with all sorts of special abilities, with pistols and artifacts and swords and, I don't know, non-weaponry things as well, books and journals and hats and boots that make you move faster. So it's got that like adventure element, but it's very much a Euro game. And then you read these stories and you make a decision and you roll dice to see what happens in a pretty interesting way, because you can also spend that courage to be able to pass any of those tests. And you fight bandits along the road. So nothing is really that complex. And probably at the end of the day, a lot of those things are equal, or there's a clear best decision sometimes. It's kind of one of those two. Like, eh, I could do any of these things, they're all good. Or I could risk going over here to hope I draw a really good card. Or, oh, this is clearly my best option, I have to do that right now. But it's really, really fun, and that story arc was great. There's 2 characters, they say, oh, these stories are really, really long, so play them with 2 players. So we did, and that was super exciting. We really enjoyed that. So that was a good time doing that and whatnot. So, Near and Far is really good. I now have a copy of Near and Far, so that's exciting. To be able to play this with other people and maybe try the longer campaign. There's like a 10 quest campaign, and we did like a 4 quest one. But even one off, the game is fun. So there was one negative that my wife really felt, and I started to see it, which was the game felt really, really fast. Like, you could get a couple of those tents out on a turn, and you have like 14 of them. And if you're getting 2 out a turn, suddenly it's like 7 turns, and it just doesn't feel very long. It wasn't typically 7 turns, but it was probably 10 to 14, and these are pretty fast turns. I'm going to go here, collect these, your turn, go. I'm going to go here, I'm going to move this way, spend that, got to roll a die, I succeeded, then I'm going to spend these, I'm done, go. Like, turns were a minute at best, and so with reading the stories and everything, the game got to 60 minutes, but that was long, even, in our 2-player games, and so it just felt a little bit quicker than the pace that we wanted to be. They do suggest, hey, you could put more tents down, so you have to get rid of them and all sorts of things to do that. We also thought maybe, you know, in the typical Euro fashion, when somebody runs out of tents, let everybody take one more turn. They kind of know that might be a simple thing to do, but that was that. A bunch of games I got to play were down at a cottage I stayed at with my family. And so I'll just talk about some of the things that are there. So first off, Crokinole was super popular. Everybody was playing Crokinole. I had a board down there. Kind of had it set out on like a table they had, and just stayed out there all week, and people just kept playing when they were in and out of the house. So that was really exciting to see, you know, kids playing against my dad, and you know, siblings, I'm playing my brother, and all sorts of stuff. So Crokinole's great. Busted out Ice Cool, kids had a lot of fun with that. Busted out Time's Up Title Recall. That went over super well. My brother was amazing at guessing. Like, he just retained everything and could guess, boom, and, you know, the one word stuff, we killed it. I think we got like 7 or 8 in one round, which I've never seen in 30 seconds. So that was really fun. We had a great time with that. And I played, I guess I didn't track it in here, but we got a chance to play, what's the kids' one? Stone Age. My first Stone Age, and the kids loved that. We had a great time with that, as well as I picked up the Protect the Pride Lands Lion Guard game and played that with some of the younger kids. And really simple game, really easy to see through as an adult, but beautiful with all the figures from the show. Great cards, simple mechanism, so it kept moving. The kids were making decisions, even if they were suboptimal, they, like, knew how to play. So even if they were losing, they were having fun playing, and they knew how to play the game. So that was a really fun game. That was a neat little game for what it is. That one was interesting. So I got a chance to do Play a bunch of those down at the cottage. Played Tiny Epic Quest. So this is the newest one from Gamelin Games, the Tiny Epic series. The whole package is very Zelda-esque. It just looks like they ripped off Zelda. Maybe not in a bad way. Ripped off is obviously a negative connotation, but just like, hey, let's go back to Zelda, because that was good, right? Like, amazing. So they did that, and that was a cool idea. Little item meeples where they hold things. They can hold different things. You got the boomerang, you got the rubies, you got the books, you got the swords, all kinds of different things. The gameplay in no way, shape, or form reminded me of Zelda. So people said, like, oh, it's just Zelda in a box. It looks like Zelda in a box. I don't think the gameplay is anything like that. I think that's okay. You can move around. I mean, I guess there's, like, locations, so there's kind of dungeons you can go into to get rewards. So, yes, I see that being Zelda-esque, but what happens is you kind of draw these random cards, and you can move. It's almost like a grid, and you can move around the grid in different directions. So whether it be you can move up or down, now you can move left or right, now you can move diagonal, now you can go around the outside by boat. You do that for a phase, and then you go back and forth rolling dice. So you roll these dice, and you're advancing the magic track to see if you can increase your magic, which doesn't really let you cast magic, it just says you have magic. Or you can go and fight goblins, and if you kill goblins, you're going to get points. Or you can complete quests by being in certain locations, or you can unlock special items that give you abilities. So it was all there, but nothing, like, wowed me. The die roll was a little mitigatable, but tough. I played it solo several times, and I think, like, the minimum score to be, like, a total noob is to get 40 points. And I would complete, like, several quests and kill several goblins, so maybe I was just, like, trying to do too many things and I needed to hyper-focus, but I kept getting 34 points over and over again. So it could be that I kept losing, that I wasn't as big of a fan of the game. I know a lot of people are liking it, saying it's one of their favorite of the series. And I don't want to be against dice rolling, because that is fun. But it just didn't capture me a ton. But I would play it. So it's not a hate. But I was done with it after several solo plays and a couple with people. So there's that. All right, got a chance to play Viral. So Viral is the new Dice Tower Essential game from Arcane Wonders. So this is an area control, hand management, light deck building game for 2 to 5 players. And you are viruses attacking a body. Now, they're pretty good about saying, like, hey, you're the common cold, and you're a fever, and you're a stomach bug, or whatever. You know, very tame viruses. The artwork is very cartoony, so it's just kind of a silly theme. And I really like this game. I think it's a lot of fun. It's definitely area control. It can be frustrating. That classic, like, area control, whoever goes last really controls everything. So that's kind of interesting in terms of what's happening there and what you can manipulate. But you're kind of playing cards, and you play, I'm going to, you know, do this action in the liver. And then you get to place new units on the board in the liver. You get to move them around, or you can attack and kill other ones. And then at the end of the round, there's like a little phase where they go through each organ and they say, they're actually zones. They go through and say, oh, who won this? You get so many victory points. You also get research points. And that's really cool. Research points, if you get too many, then once you get there, they can kind of like diagnose you, and they completely remove you from the body at the end of the round. So you can score a lot of points, but then you're gone. So that was kind of interesting. What did happen a couple times, which was kind of a negative, was like one of the last organs would give you -1 research point, and people would figure out how to score a bunch of points, win that zone, and go down on research one space. So that did feel a little weird to me. I could see a little house rule on something around that. Like, either don't put that in the last space, or if you get to the top, you can't go backward. Because that was really, really powerful. Like, to be like, oh, I just scored 8 points, and I don't get removed from the body, so I'm here to fight again next round. I enjoy it. It moves pretty quick. It's like 6 rounds, but every round is like 10 minutes, so it's a 60-minute game. And it's pretty interesting. Here's the take I've had. With everybody I've played and taught it to, I'm the person who likes the game the best. is my sense. And I never know what to do with games like that. What do I do with a game where I like it the best? Now, it's one thing if it's like one of my top 10 games of all time and people know it and they're almost like excited to play it with me because I know I like the game so much. Or in the case of like a Terra Mystica, so many people I play that game would love it. So maybe it's not their favorite game of all time, but it is like a game they love. It would be a top 25 for them. So they're like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm not so worried about those games that are so beloved. But maybe kind of in a rebellion sense. I've always talked about how I just can't, you know, there aren't a lot of people that want to play Rebellion with me. Granted, there are, and sometimes it's tricky. Yes, Gary, I know you'll play Rebellion with me anytime. Thursday night at the store doesn't make sense to me. But I never do with those games. It's like, I think it's, you know, borderline great, and other people are like, it's good, or I don't really like it. So do I now be the cheerleader for that game, bringing it out all the time? But I definitely think it's worth a play, worth a look. There's a copy now at the store, so you can try that. It's coming out in the next month or so. So get yourself down there, try it out. Look up some videos, whatever you got to do. And you'll see Viral. Let's see. Played some China, played some Parade, plays Lisboa. I love Lisboa. Played it with my wife. She loved it. Played solo recently. That was really good solo. Very mechanical, very Euro, very fun. Well done. Hard. I did win. Yay. But Lisboa, definitely my favorite Vital Lacerda game. I love it. Again, it's another one that I'm the one who likes it the most with everybody I've played it with. But I think a lot of people, it pushes into that category of great. So I'm not worried about saying like, hey, let's try this again. And I know my wife wants to rematch. Well, I want to rematch her because she beat me. But there's that. Played Stop Thief from Restoration Games. So Stop Thief, I used to play this as a kid. Came out in the 70s. I was born in the 80s, early 80s. So I played it with my brother, with my dad, with family members. And so basically you're trying to catch crooks and you listen. So it's a deduction game where you try to listen for what's happening. So I played this with my wife and daughter. It was fun. It was a good time. So the one negative we had was you can get a private clue and you can figure out the exact space where they are. And then you can just kind of go from there. So you're never really deducing from the start where the thief is. You're kind of getting that private clue and then going there. And that's through some hand management of cards. So they removed dice rolling from the game for the random roll and move. And they put in these cards, which I thought was a smart mechanism. But then you're always just desperately trying to get to your private clue. And that was a little, not as exciting. So, so once somebody catches a thief, then another one comes out on the board, and you start over again, you move around. So, it's a neat game. It's a fun, it feels like a beer and pretzels game. It's got the app. They did a great job with the app, on that front, but it didn't capture us, but you know, it was worth a simple play. Again, at the store, check it out, try it out. Played Downforce, another restoration game. So this is a revamp of an old game as well. I'm going to stop saying that with Restoration Games. That's what the company does. So I played Downforce several times now. So it's an auctioning game, racing game. It's not really racing. You're really just trying to bet on which cars, and if your car wins, you get more money. So you want your car to be in the top cars, it seems like, to win. But you really want to guess things right and bet and auction, and you play cards to move them all around. It's pretty fun. People haven't been wowed by it, but it's got that 6-player count. It's pretty fast. The auction is weird to teach people the first time because you're like trying to teach them, okay, this is how the game's going to go. Then we're going to do this auction. This is how the auction goes. It feels like it takes, like, it's probably 5 minutes or 6 minutes to get up and running. But then it's like, once you start racing, the game is like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and the auction takes like 10. So it's like a solid over half hour game, but the first 15 kind of feels like we're not doing anything yet. And the auction is weird. It's like they tried to speed up because you have to play cards that you get dealt to auction instead of just, hey, I'll bid three. And that, like, it's definitely faster, but it's awkward for people. So that's kind of strange. So I really want to get, like, a second play with a group and just see what happens when you just jump in. The auction's 5 minutes. The game's 15 minutes. How does it feel in 20 minutes? I definitely think there's, like, losers. And they know they're losers at some point, and that could be a little rough. But again, in a 15-20-minute game, what are you going to do? But great production on that. Whew! I'm just going to keep talking games. All right, Ex Libris. New game from Renegade Games. This is a game about gnomes making a library, and you have to organize all your books. When I told my wife about the organization, she was like, oh, I love organizing things. You have to alphabetize. No Dewey Decimal System here. Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System? Yeah, so Ex Libris is a worker placement, hand management, book management, tableau management game, I guess. You're putting the books out in shelves and scoring various points. Lots of variability in this game. So you put out a card, you say, okay, this is the favored book. Every book of this type scores bonus points. Or whoever has the most scores points, and it's got the little first, second, third. This book is the banned book, so this is going to be worth -1 points for every one you have. And by the way, cards have like 3 or 4 or 5 books on them, I think. I feel like it's 3 or 4 for most of them. So you got multiple books on a card when you play it. And then there'll be... are there other endgame scoring things? I can't remember. There might be some other endgame scoring. And then everybody gets a personal book type. Ooh, if you collect books of this type, you're just going to get 2 points for each of those. So that kind of creates some difference. And then you have an asymmetric power. And then you have worker placement spaces that rotate every round. So one of them stays and the others rotate. So you deal like the number of players or the number of players plus one, whatever it is. And like the lowest numbered one stays and now you've got an additional one. So you may have 4 on the first turn, 5 on the second, 6 on the third, 7 on the fourth, etc. You play till somebody gets 12 cards in their tableau. And then the game trigger ends. Game ends. It might be if you go through all the cards in the deck, might be the other trigger if you don't get to there. And basically you're playing these workers to spaces and the spaces will say draw more cards or shelve cards, and shelving is when you put them in your tableau. It's really a simple game and it's 30 to 60 minutes and boom, 4-player, we knocked it out in under 60 minutes, I think even with the explanation. It was pretty fun. The text is brutal and I've heard a ton of people say this, so if you've heard of the game and you've watched reviews, you don't need me to say it to you, but if you haven't, there's like a lot of text on those worker placement spaces. They're like little tiles. And they're, like, impossible to read. It's tiny with a terrible background. And so that's definitely a rough handicap. Like, in a loud store trying to play and talking to people and not paying attention well, I just had to pick up the tile and, like, read it for myself. And they, you know, some of them were pretty complex. Like, a paragraph explanation, not a sentence or, you know, a couple symbols or something. It did seem weird, like, there were ways, like, some powers were better, and there were ways for people to get a whole bunch of cards easier and get them on the table easier, and then it just felt like, we played with Brian, and he just filled his tableau so fast, and then ended with, like, 16 cards, and I, like, barely got to 10 or 12, and so he just had more points, naturally, by doing that. So that just felt strange, like, he just had mechanisms to do it, so... on the fun factor, I really had a lot of fun playing the game. On the clever factor, I'm not sure that I really felt clever, and my special ability seemed cool. I did find out it was different mid-game, and I could have possibly taken more advantage of it. So that might have been my own fault. But that clever was like, not sure I felt clever. Again, I steal my two things from Vassal and Sean Ramirez. Tom Vassal says, did I have fun playing the game? Sean says, did I feel clever? I try to take both of those. So I really had fun playing Ex Libris, and that's important. I think the reason we're all playing board games is to have fun. I'm not making money playing board games. And I guess there's some stress relief. I also like to see other people have fun. But I definitely had fun playing it. Clever, I'm not sure, so I'd have to play it again. But that time, 30 to 60 minutes, with a rotating worker placement, that's pretty intriguing to me. I definitely came home and told my wife she should try it. So, there's that. Okay. Next up is Summit, the board game. So, we got a bunch of advanced copies. They're at the store right now. We played Summit, the board game, cooperative. This is, you're at the base of a mountain. You're scaling, trying to get to the peak of the mountain, and then get everybody back down to camp. And random events happen to you. There's dice rolls. You've got to get oxygen, and you're carrying equipment. You've got a Sherpa with you who can give you more oxygen, and food is another commodity. And if you don't have oxygen, you don't have food, then you start to lose, like, morale or spirit or something. If you're carrying too much, that stuff can go down. You start to slow down. You really don't want to slow down, and then you're going to die. And there's definitely dying in this game. And so we work cooperatively. It's got all these cool triangular tiles. You lay these out, and then you kind of, like, climb the knots and the ropes. And some just have, like, a knot or two, and you can move through them really quick. And others have, like, a whole bunch of knots. Like, if it's an ice section, they're all, like, really close. And it takes a lot of movement points to get up them. Or other times, the rope is, like, a different color, and it means it's, like, tough air. It's tough breathing, so you have to spend oxygen to get through that space. Work your way through the top. Work with other people. Every turn, you roll dice, and you see what happens to you. You could draw a card. I don't even remember what the other thing did. You roll a die, and then you might have to draw a random event. That's where the game broke down for me a little bit in liking it. It was definitely thematic, but then you draw these event cards, and it could be like, you know, avalanche, and everything's destroyed, and everybody slides back down, and like, just totally game-changing. Fun, but game-changing. Or it could be like, you just found this amazing golden breathing apparatus, and you can fly to the top of the mountain without any oxygen. I mean, they weren't quite that extreme, but they were pretty swingy, and that's tough. And then the die was literally just like, you know, 4 out of 6 chance of drawing an event. And so I wish the event die was like, this could happen, or this could happen, or you could draw a card, or if like the draw a card was like, draw 3 and they all happen, or I don't know, or there was a way to mitigate or spend points, or even if it was, I think like Gary had suggested this, like draw a card and this event is going to happen if somebody doesn't do such and such. And so, you know, it kind of tells you what's going to happen unless you do something. So you could kind of choose. And there were a few of those. Hey, this is now at that spot. Go get the token. You can use it. I think at the end of the day, the game is not cooperative. Like, I think it's trying to be a competitive game. And so all those bad things happening to everybody make it kind of interesting and Ameritrashy and whatnot. You know, it's definitely a thematic game and whatnot. So it's definitely a try before you buy. See if it's your cup of tea kind of thing. But I was glad I played it. I'd probably play it again, but I'd probably play it competitively to see what it felt like. That is Summit the Board Game from Inside Up Games, Upside Down, Upside In. I don't remember the name of the company. But there's that. Played Photosynthesis from Blue Orange Games. This one's been getting a lot of talk, a lot of buzz. This has been said like, oh, this is a Spiel des Jahres, you know, game, that style. So really cool idea. Hexagon shaped board with hexagons on it. So the whole thing is a hexagon. You've got this tile that goes around the edge. This is the sunlight and it shows you where the sunlight's coming in. You've got little trees and the trees gather light. The bigger they are, the more light they gather. And light is like your action points. You could spend action points to put new trees. You kind of like unlock trees from your board. You could upgrade trees. And then eventually, like the largest trees, you can like send them up to the heavens and score points and get these point tiles. We decided to play the advanced variant. And in the advanced variant, if like a 2-height tree is standing 2 spaces away from a tree with the sunlight blocking, then that tree doesn't gather any sunlight. Sorry, that always happens. But it doesn't gather sunlight, and you can't upgrade that tree. So in the regular version, you don't get any action points, so it's important there, but you can still upgrade it. So the advanced variant was, like, way more strategic and way more thinky and interesting, but, like, literally this one sentence at the end of the book, just, like, you play an extra round, and it was tough. Like, it was hard. And then what it led us to is at the end of the game, people were just, like, locked, and they couldn't do anything. And we ran out of scoring tiles on, like, the low end. And so then when you're supposed to score, there's no more scoring tiles. And Blue Orange told me, yep, so nobody gets tiles. So we literally, like, spent an entire round almost, and people just didn't get points. And then the game was over. And it felt really, like, let down. I want to try the game again. I want to play on the regular mode, and I think the regular mode is where it's at. Right? Typically, me, I'm going to want more strategic, heavier, thinkier is fine. But in this case, I felt like it like took the soul out of the game. Like, even though it was more realistic, it felt like you didn't get anywhere. You weren't really doing anything because you were so blocked. It was so realistic. So I want to try the other way. But it was a neat game either way. I really did like it. And even with that like poor ending, it was like, ah, it was still really cool. Very unique. I think if we play it simpler, it's going to flow a lot faster. It's three rounds. It goes. People are constantly rotating through. So I think that'd be really interesting. So that was Photosynthesis. It's pretty close to just a buy for me. I mean, I guess it's hard to tell people, like, go buy this, and then they hate it, and then you're like, ah. But, I mean, it's a solid game. It's super fun. Yeah, I'm going to try it again, but we'll see where that goes. Whew, I got a lot here. Okay, The Climbers. Climbers is a new game from Simply Complex, which is a line of Capstone games. So The Climbers is a whole bunch of blocks. Looks like you're playing blocks like when you were a kid. And you put all these blocks together, and then everybody has a little wooden kind of meeple, and you have to try to climb to the top. Whoever's at the top at the game end is the winner. If you were, you know, if you tie and people are on the same level, the person who got there first wins. And so on a turn, basically, you can move, if possible. You can move a block, like literally just pick it up and put it anywhere, as long as it can't overhang, and there's a couple little rules there. And then you can move up one level, or whatever number of levels you can, one at a time. You could cheat a little. You've got ladders, so you can move up two levels on a turn, four levels on a turn. You can block something, so nobody can move there, move that block, or put a block on that block for a whole turn. And the game just goes, and the mountain just changes and evolves, and the game looks like it's going to be 15 minutes, and it gets to like 40 minutes, and clever plays, and oh my gosh, and backstabbing, and just really cool. This is close to an essential game for me. Like, this just seems like everybody should have this game. It's so simple to teach. There's such great decisions that make it interesting. It's awesome. Like, it's just awesome. I just think this game is great. I'm going to use this in so many situations. It plays five, which is beautiful. Played it two. Two was weird. It felt like two needed a rule, because the game ends if everybody can't move, and then whoever's the highest, or chooses not to move, I guess. And in two, it literally just became like, oh, if you're below me and you can't move, the game's over. And that was strange, and we were like building separate islands. So at two, it might not be quite there, but otherwise, it was neat. So yeah, that's The Climbers from Capstone. When that comes out, I say just snag it. It's a really cool game. We played Medici the Card Game. So Medici is a classic Reiner Nietzsche auction game. And you're trying to collect goods on boats and have the most goods and all sorts of things. So now they made a card game version. It kind of removes the auction in a way. It's more of like a layout, a display of cards, and then you can take them at any time, but you only take from one end, and you can only take a certain number, so there gets to be more and more cards in the display. And then when a round is over, everybody's filled their boat with five cards. You just calculate, like, okay, who had the most points? You get these coins. Who had the most of each commodity? You get these coins. And you play three rounds, and you retain your commodities, and any cards that are straight points go away. There's a couple clever tricks in there. There's cards that are like green, and green cards don't count towards your boat, so you can get like extra of them, and a few other things. The game just plays smooth. It's just fun. The theme is not present, but it was really a good time, so I was glad I played that one. That's Medici the Card Game. Grail Games, I believe, is the publisher on that one. Witching Hour. It's a game we were given at Gen Con. I wasn't there, obviously. From Indie Boards and Cards? Yes. And Witching Hour is a Take That card game, all themed around, you know, cursing and witches and all sort, not cursing, swearing, cursing each other and like attacking, and you're trying to not get points, and you're playing these cards, and you basically like collect sets in your hex pile, and sets of cards are worth X number of points. Now, if you overcollect, they kind of max out. It's not really a strategy, because being like, hey, I only get 5 points instead of 15 is okay, but you still don't even want the 5 points. Some cards give you negative, and so you're playing all these cards. You can play them in sets, and then you can block people by playing sets of cards. And when somebody runs out of cards, everybody puts their cards they have left in their hex pile. I think it's when everybody but one, that person puts them in. And so you're trying to run out of cards as fast as you can, and not score points. And again, you play over three rounds. It was pretty good. It felt like the cards were really cleverly created. Like, I liked the ideas of what was happening, but it was just that random card draw and trying to figure out who has what and where are we going to go, and you gang up on the leader and some of that stuff. But again, I played five people. It played quick. It was fun. Not a tragedy as a take that card game, but to me, if I'm going to play a fast take that card game, I'm going to play Dead Man's Draw, and it just didn't have that like fun, exciting appeal that that one had. But it's definitely interesting game. That copy is at the store. Oh my gosh, there's so much. Okay. Yeah, three more games. I'm not going to talk about anything else at the end because it's getting long. Klondike Rush. This was given to us by Ryan Lockett, Red Raven Games. So Klondike Rush is a economy game. You're trying to have the most money at the end. And so you're given money to start and some orders cards. And you have one contract card. And what happens, there's a board with all sorts of random tokens. And you're trying to complete orders by collecting those tokens. So every turn, somebody flips over a card. That card gets auctioned off. When you win the card will give you... it could give you an investment in a color of mine. So there's red, green, yellow, and blue mines. It could give you investment in that. It could give you a mine token to place on the board. Or it could give you a new order that you could go try to complete. And so you're trying to win these, and you pay to put the mines out on the board, and then you collect tokens. You can turn those in to get your orders cards. And it kind of had a clever, like, the mines expand and the board expands, and it's easier to get to things that are further away. But initially it costs a bunch, so the first person has to pay more, and later people don't have to pay as much. And whatnot. And then once per game, you can turn in that contract card and you can collect. So as more mines of a color get put out there. So if five red mines are out there, then every red investment is worth $5. So if I've got three mine cards with investments on them and red's worth five, I'm going to get $15. So that's kind of how you get your money back to be able to bid with. If you happen to not spend that at the end of the game, then you will collect at the end of the game, and everybody collects automatically at the end of the game. So you basically collect twice, but one's the end of the game. So it was okay two-player, but we like totally underestimated what things were worth, and we were running out of money quickly. And then when we played four-player, the problem became it was like two people were competing to win, and two people were out. And at the end of the game, we're sitting there with no money, nothing to do, and they're just bidding and getting all these extra cards. So I'm not sure, like, obviously you've got to know how to value, and this is one of the things people say about auction games. If you can't value well, then, you know, you're out and you've messed up the whole balance of that economy. So it's really on players to stay with that. But it's pretty light and pretty short. Like, it's probably in the 60-minute range. So I would give it another try and see. The art is beautiful. The board's beautiful. I got to give props to Ryan Lockett for designing different types of games, because he certainly does. But I'm not sure that one will have that staying power. Trickster, Champions of Time. This is from Action Phase Games. It's a trick-taking game. And this one's really good. So what happens is you shuffle together. There are seven different champions in eight colors. So you got a deck of 56 cards. You deal them out X to each player based on the number of players. You make a row of trash, which is kind of like a discard pile that people can exchange cards with. And then somebody leads a card, and the second player in each suit determines the suit. So if I play the Peddler champion, and it's green, the next player could either play a green card, in which case everybody has to play green going around, or they can play a Peddler, in which case everybody has to play a Peddler going around, or they can play a non-green, non-Peddler card, in which case everybody has to play a card that nothing exists yet. Like, you're not following any of the rules. Or the rules are to not match. Yes. And if everybody can do that, then the trickster busts and they get all the cards. Otherwise, anybody who can't... I feel like I said this backwards. If anybody can't follow suit, they get all of the cards. And you don't want to collect cards. If everybody can, then the trickster gets all the cards. And you're trying not to collect cards, except if you have the most in a color at the end of the round, then you get 0 points. But if you're tied, you score those points. Every card is worth 1 point. The next catch is every card you play has a special ability on it. So each champion has the same ability. So all the black, green, yellow, red, peddler all have the same ability. So the game gets pretty complex in what you're doing and trying to make those decisions. Sometimes the point of feeling random, but not. I think once you figure it out, it really reminded me of Trick of the Rails, in that you're just learning to play the game, and then you learn to like play the game. And so I played it a bunch and start to see some of those things, but I'm still teaching it to people. It plays 2 to 7. I actually played it with 2, and it kind of worked. It did work. It was weird, though. It felt like losing was better than winning, because losing was getting all the cards, and then being like, well, now I have zero. And then the person who had, like, two cards again got 2 points. And so they did really well, but they got 2 points compared to zero. So that was kind of a funny thing. But it had a couple mechanisms to make that work. So I really like this game. I'm going to keep playing this game. I'll have it on me. Let's play it. It's awesome. So check out Trickster Champions of Time. And last, I will talk about Delve, another game from Indie Boards and Cards. And Delve is basically Carcassonne the Ameritrash game. And so you're laying tiles down like in Carcassonne and building a dungeon. You're putting your characters on them. And then when the zone gets complete, instead of just scoring points, it's like there's a battle with other people and you roll dice and you determine what you'll get for rewards, which come in like gold cards or treasure, which give you special abilities. Or if you're the only person, then you have to draw like a dungeon card and somebody reads the story and you pick an option, kind of a la Above and Below, Near and Far. And then you may roll dice, or you may succeed, or you may flat out fail if you pick the wrong thing, which is pretty hilarious and frustrating. Although it does build in a little mechanism that it's like, you don't get any treasure, but you get half the gold even if you fail. So that's kind of nice. It's got a little euro in there for that. And so it was neat. We played it. It was fun. A lot of these, like, good, not great games that I've played in here. But it was neat, and it was played pretty quick. And, yeah, I like calling that Carcassonne the Ameritrash game. Speaking of Ameritrash, I forgot, I also played Zombicide Black Plague. I love that game. It's super fun. I remember playing some Zombicide, and it's overwrought, and if it goes on too long, I played Black Plague by myself, controlling 6 characters. Did not bother me. Rolled dice to decide things. Super fun. Loved that theme. Loved how things worked. Simple, simple, simple AI. And I was able to knock it out in like 45 minutes to an hour playing some of those. So I'm down to play some Zombicide Black Plague. That'd be super fun. I think I've got like that itch to find those expansion characters to see what other characters can do, because the ones in the box are not amazingly exciting. But that's that. Hey, there you go. There's some games. How's that? Haven't talked to you in a while. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Yeah, got lots of things coming up, lots of things to check out. Should have Brian on the next episode. Finally, I wish I could, name this after non-Star Wars. It would be At Last and whatnot for that episode. But yeah, thanks, everybody. That's episode 62. Looking? Found someone you have, I think. So here I am. We're back in the swing of things. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I am your host, The Brant, and I hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on September 5th, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. And as always, thank you for listening. Da, 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 da. Oh, that's going to clash awful with the end music.